I think it should be a very big year. Beyond that, it's going to be interesting because if prices stay up very, very high, that could actually be reflected in a little bit of downturn. But I do think that the opportunities for a different type of travel are certainly going to be there.
Welcome to Upon Arrival, a show that uncovers stories and strategies that make up all the moving parts of business events tourism with me, Adelaine Ng. If you told me a year ago that the cost of travel, for example, airfares, would go up significantly, I would have said, hogwash. Trouble is, somebody did warn me, and that person was my guest today, David Bierman. David is a tourism crisis and recovery expert and an author on the subject, amongst other roles. And since he got that big prediction correct, I thought it would be a smart thing to do to catch up with him and get his predictions for 2023. Here's that conversation, but I admit I had to get something off my chest first, and that was the chaos and frustration of travel in recent months, not just in Australia where I live and around Asia Pacific, but also in America, which dominated the news networks there. David, thank you so much for joining me again on this program. Christmas is over, New Year's Day is over, but as far as I can tell, there is still chaos in the skies with flight delays, forcing last-minute change in travel plans, including hotel cancellations, luggage not arriving, etc. I had my own incident a couple of weeks ago, about a week before Christmas, where I had a flight delayed and I had a booking to Bangkok through trip.com. And 3 days before I was due to fly, I got a message saying that they could not secure my flight. So I was left scrambling.
Wow.
To find a replacement flight. Even the replacement flight that they were suggesting, you know, I got the message at 2 a.m. I wasn't awake. I was awake at 5-something a.m. that morning, and I saw that message. My husband and I immediately went on to the computer and tried to book the flight that they suggested, but that had booked out already as well. So
And you can multiply those nightmares by thousands and thousands and thousands. Unfortunately, so many people have been traveling, particularly during this peak season, Christmas, New Year, etc. It has been an absolute nightmare for a whole lot of reasons, of course.
Well, when I finally got onto the plane, I mean, it cost me more than $1,300.
Wow.
More than the initial flight, just because that was the only option that I had available. But everybody that I met at the airport, at several airports, because, you know, I had to transit 2 stops to get to my destination in Bangkok. Every person that I met at the airport and on the plane had a delayed flight. You know, people were frenzied. They were frustrated, understandably so. And I was supposed to meet my sister in Bangkok. She flew in from another city in Australia, which is Perth. And she arrived without her luggage. So all our travel plans were a nightmare, and met so many other people. I mean, I thought our experience was horrible enough until I spoke to other people whose flight delays meant that they had to scramble and find a hotel in a transit destination, for example. So, you know, and then that means all your other travel plans, including hotel bookings, all needed to be changed on the fly or canceled on the fly. And imagine all the admin that goes with that as well, all the claims, et cetera. I'm going to assume that this is all temporary chaos, although I think the airlines could have been a lot better prepared. Love to see what you think, as well as your other predictions for tourism for the year. David, I know you're a tourism crisis risk and recovery expert, adjunct fellow at University Technology Sydney, and also author of Tourism Crisis and Destination Recovery. And you're also one of the most accurate tourism forecasters I know. So David, thank you so much for joining me again on the show.
Well, you're only as good as your last forecast, Adelaine, so I can't guarantee that my forecasts, such as they are, will necessarily come to fruition. But anyway, let's hope so. I think it's important really to give a little bit of context. Why are we in the mess that we're in? And that's actually very important. And I did discuss that quite a lot in my book. And I've noticed there has been an absolute flurry of literature coming out from tourism academics around the world who have been talking about the impact of COVID, what they refer to as the new normal, which is supposed to be coming when COVID is finally finished, whenever that's going to be. But let's go to the context first. During COVID, of course, airlines virtually had to shed most of their staff. So what happened is a lot of people left, many people who'd been working for the airlines for many, many years at every level, administration, baggage handling, flights, airline stewards and stewardesses. In fact, just about everybody in every section of the airline industry was affected. So there was this massive number of people who left fairly quickly. And of course, for the best part of 2020 and 2021, there was very, very little doing in aviation. So basically, there was no reason to have this stuff. So many of the people who left decided they weren't going to come back under any circumstance, which meant that when airlines started to rehire staff towards the second half of 2022, a lot of the people that were taken on were people who were inexperienced and who needed training. And, you know, many of those roles that staff members had were quite complicated. Baggage handling, for a start, is not an art, it's a science. So consequently, at every level of service, you had people who were coming in. Airlines, ironically, had to pay people more to lure them back into the industry because many people who left very disgruntled for one reason or another. It was depending how the airline handled it or what sort of benefits they did or didn't get from governments. So that had quite a big effect. So you had one issue of staffing. You had another issue which was coming up in that airlines and most other businesses in tourism lost a vast amount of money during the pandemic. This meant that also too, as well as having inefficiencies and problems from an operational perspective, airlines were also charging more money for it because in a sense they had to make up for money that they had lost. And even though many airlines around the world did get government support and bailouts, tax write-offs and a whole lot of other things, it wasn't really enough money to make up for what they'd lost. So if we take Qantas as an example, in 2020 and 2021, Qantas lost around about $7 billion. Now, that was fairly typical for a large airline. In fact, what happened with some airlines around the world is that governments actually repurchased them rather than bail them out. So you had the financial situation is that people were desperate to travel again. People wanted to see their relatives. You had a lot of people trying to service them who were either unqualified or unskilled to do so. Consequently, you had this rash of problems. So whether it was to do with lost luggage or reservations that went amiss or airline cancellations because there were a lack of staff, these things have been, I guess, much more than teething troubles.
It's a storm in a teacup waiting to happen.
It was. And it was more like a storm in an ocean in a sense, because really what had happened is every airline in the world was in the same position of trying to get back into some kind of efficient operation after not operating for quite a long time. So you had pilots, for example, who'd more or less forgotten how to fly. So it's...
Ooh.
You had technological changes. It's been a really, really very, very difficult period. So consequently, there's been all sorts of chaotic situations. And certainly as we've reached various peak periods, so we know right now from an Australian perspective in particular, December and January are really busy times for flights under any circumstances. Added to the background problems that have afflicted airlines and airports and everything else, you had all sorts of things going wrong. And I think as we sort of head towards the middle of 2023, many of those operational problems will be sorted out. But the cost problems, probably not so much so. And there's a few reasons for that.
You're talking about the high price of cost. Yeah. Now. I mean, I was going to say that last year, I admit I was a bit skeptical when you said airfares were going to go up significantly and that travel would become a luxury experience like the old days.
Yeah.
I was looking at the airfares in the first quarter last year and things were still looking okay. Look at airfares now. Just as you predicted, they're well and truly up, sometimes four times what they used to be before the pandemic. So how long will this continue?
It's going to continue for quite a while, certainly well into 2023 and maybe even beyond that. And there's a few reasons. I mean, I have the experience. I'm going to go to Perth in a few weeks to a conference. In 2019, you could easily get Perth fares for, say, Sydney Perth or Melbourne Perth fares for around about $350 return. Interestingly enough, when I first started in the travel industry in 1981, I was started off as a domestic consultant, and I was selling fares to Perth in 1981 for about $1,100. That was your bog standard economy fare. So they'd actually gone down from that level down to around about the $300 or thereabouts mark. I'm paying to go to Perth in 4 weeks, around about $1,300,
oh,
which really shocked me to my core because it's even more than it was back in 1981. So we have this situation, and that's just one example, but you can look at just about any destination around the world or any domestic destination, and you'll see that airfares, generally speaking, have gone up. I think there was a lot of hope when airlines started to resume travel. There were a lot of special deals that were sort of put in to incentivize people to go back to flying. And that lasted for a couple of months. And of course, the general thinking, particularly amongst a lot of travel journalists, was this is terrific. Fares are going to go down because the demand is up. Believe me, that was just a temporary delight. If you were lucky enough to get one of those cheap fares, you can celebrate the fact that you have them. The truth is, airlines have a number of factors which are influencing fares. One of them, of course, is the fairly high price of fuel.
Mm.
It's not as bad as it could be, but when you consider the impact of the war between Russia and the Ukraine and fuel supply problems in Europe and a lot of other places, that's had a huge impact on fares and prices. And you have to keep in mind, for most airlines, fuel represents half of their costs. So for a low-cost carrier, it represents around about 60% of their costs. For a full-service carrier, that represents around about 40% of their costs. So when you've got high fuel prices, that's going to certainly have a huge impact on airfares. The other things that has a huge impact on airfares has also, too, been the cost of rehiring people, retraining, re-equipping airlines. So what had happened is that a lot of airlines, of course, got rid of their aircraft because they weren't using them. Then they had to really buy them back, and also to make sure that they were airworthy and safe and all those other things which are so critical to the operation of an airline. They had to pay the cost of remarketing. In many cases, they had to re-equip their hubs. So these cost factors have been enormous. But the other cost factor, of course, which I mentioned earlier, was the fact that you still had all this debt that you had to service.
Mm.
So airlines had billions of dollars of debt to service. They weren't going to service it by charging cheap fares. So basically, who's going to fix up the debt? It's going to be the passenger. So I think because of those reasons and others, the prognosis as far as airfares is concerned, for certainly for the next year, is that they're going to be pretty high. Market forces may start to drive them down eventually, but basically because there's been 2 and a bit years of pent-up demand, people prepared to pay a lot more than they would prefer to. It's very, yeah, very much a seller's market in aviation.
Wow. So if travel is now considered a luxury and will be that way for a little while, what's happening with traditional luxury travel? I mean, the first class, the 5 to 7 star resort stays, the premium experiences, etc. Mm. How does that stand out as premium now?
They're still going to be premium, but I think what happens is that they had always been profit leaders for airlines and hotels and for tour operators, etc. There'll still be a lot of competition in that area. It certainly takes up a portion of the market. But I think what you're going to find is that it's not the premium product probably won't be that different in price to what it was before the pandemic. It's the economy passengers and the low-cost passengers who are going to find that they're actually paying an awful lot more. So what's happened is that airlines and many other businesses in tourism have run on a business model which is called high volume, low yield. And that was is that as long as airlines were filling an aeroplane full of passengers, they would try and sell them at the lowest possible price because they wanted to keep the seats full. Now we have a situation where there's a lot of demand of people who want to travel, and we've just now starting to see the reopening of travel in and out of China. That's going to take a while before it reaches where it was in 2019. But even so, there's this pent-up market that really wants to go. And basically, they are prepared, in a sense, to pay a premium to have experiences that they could not have for 2, and sometimes in the case of China, 3 years.
So it sounds like that whole emotional buying cycle that we've been going through for the past year, that's going to have, and yeah, it looks like there's going to be another round with China now reopening their borders. So this trend could stay for a while.
I think it probably will stay for quite a while. It will certainly be the dominant theme, I think, of 2023, that certainly aviation in particular is going to be a lot more expensive than it was. On the other hand, the type of travel that people are doing is a little bit different from what it was pre-pandemic. So the concept of mass tourism, people going in huge groups, will probably not be happening again, because even though, you know, there are questions about if and when and the pandemic is over, people are a little bit more conscious about health, social distancing, and a lot of other things when it comes to travel. So the idea of groups of hundreds of travelers going together, or even busloads of 50, you can cut that more or less by half.
Yeah, I think as a trend, it was going down anyway before the pandemic, just because, you know, people of Japan and people of China, just the way that they wanted to visit other destinations was changing.
Yes. And also too, I think the opportunity that some places which were overburdened by tourists, and I, you know, look at places like Venice and Barcelona and Paris and a few other places, there are a lot of moves towards actually operating much more sustainable travel. And it's interesting that the market, certainly a large part of the travel market, wants to have a more sustainable travel experience.
Yeah.
Now, I don't necessarily count the people who are visiting friends and relatives, because they're going to be doing it as a fairly private thing. But we will see a lot of that travel. Business travel is starting to ramp up again, a little bit more quickly than many people thought it would, because, you know, so much business was transacted on sites like Zoom and those sorts of sites, that it was really thought by many people, I must admit I'm partly guilty of that, thinking that too, that for maybe not the senior business people, but the sort of middle management, would transact a lot of their international and domestic business online. It seems that's not the case. You know, people want to shake hands, move around, and certainly I think people, generally speaking, are fed up to the back teeth of doing Zoom conferences.
Yeah, and, so, you know, when I speak to destination bureau chiefs, they've been seeing, I mean, business is not as per normal, but there's certainly a strong comeback, especially from certain sections, especially India at the moment. So there's certainly traction, and there have been companies that did actually quite well during the pandemic, and they're ready to spend.
Yeah, and there are a lot of cultures where doing business face-to-face is really important.
Yeah.
You know, so whether it means you're attending a conference, or whether you're making decisions or inspecting a plant or inspecting an operation or whatever it is, people still do like to shake hands, look at each other in the eye. And in many cases, I think it surprised many business people how much people wanted to go back to that.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting in conferences. I mean, I spoke at a whole bunch of conferences last year. They were all online, and they were interesting conferences, but it just didn't have the same atmosphere. You know, if you want to go to a conference and you want to interact with people, you need ideally to do it face-to-face.
Yeah. I think many in the industry would agree with you.
Absolutely. And I do really think that there are great opportunities, I think, over the next couple of years to actually focus on the benefits of doing business or experiencing people or experiencing places firsthand rather than virtually.
Yeah. So I think business travel will continue to return. You know, its trajectory is on the upward.
Yeah.
But as far as leisure travel is concerned, because, I mean, we've been talking about what we're seeing now is the result of pent-up demand. And, of course, we've talked about the China factor as well.
Yes.
But do you see consumer demand as continuing to be high for many more months, or is it a bit more of a blimp in consumer patterns?
I think certainly over the next, you know, during 2023, when travel is relatively more open, it should be a very big year. A lot of the airlines and a lot of the tourism businesses have predicted we get back to 2019 levels by 2024, and that looks like it's going to pass. Beyond that, it's going to be interesting, because if prices in particular stay up very, very high, that could actually be reflected in a little bit of downturn. So people will have sort of got over there, I must go traveling again, and I must go and see this, and I've got to see my relatives, and I've got to see the people I'm doing business with. And they'll do that in 2023. Whether they'll continue to do it to the same extent after 2024 is a bit of an open question. But I do think that the opportunities for a different type of travel are certainly going to be there. So I think a lot of it will depend on how destinations and tourism organisations and tourism businesses and airlines actually market their product. We've seen this great huge return of cruising. So even though we sometimes get a cruise ship that will dock into a major port and half of the passengers have got COVID-19, people don't seem to be too fazed about it. Yet, you know, I remember the fuss that occurred when the Diamond Princess came into Sydney in March of 2020, and it was the worst thing in the world.
Yes.
Now we've recently had ships coming with not hundreds, but thousands of people apparently with COVID-19, and nobody seems to get too excited about it. No, it's really strange. In fact, one of the things which has been fascinating to watch has been the changed attitudes of governments towards COVID-19. I mean, the pandemic is still there. People are still dying from this disease, certainly not in the same numbers that they were. You know, when COVID was first revealed to the world in early 2020, the mortality rate of COVID was around about 2%, which is not that high for a pandemic, but it's still a matter of concern. I mean, it still meant that we've had close to 7 million deaths around the world. So the numbers are staggering, and we're still getting a million new cases a day. But for some reason, governments decided, and China was a really classic example, but certainly not alone, there was an attitude amongst governments that we had to keep AIDS out, we had to block it, we had to stop it, we had to keep it away. It didn't work anywhere very much. So we had these situations of lockdowns and people having to have vaccinations and people having to separate from each other, events being closed down, the Olympics with no spectators in both China and in the Summer and the Winter Olympics. So you had this thing of, let's try and block off this disease, till all of a sudden governments decided, well, we're just going to have to live with it. Now, the mortality rate of COVID-19 now is less than 1%, which is actually not a very different mortality rate than a lot of other flus. And that's part of the reason why governments have stop some of the draconian types of restrictions against travel. But, you know, for Joe Public out there or Jane Public out there, people don't understand. All of a sudden, one day it couldn't go anywhere because of AIDS. Now you can travel, do whatever you like, despite AIDS. So it's been very confusing for people.
Yeah, I know. And even with those numbers, I'm sure, you know, there's plenty of debate out there about what the numbers mean and how they might have been calculated. And there's all that sort of discussion, but we won't get into. And just as I'm speaking as well, governments are still seemingly, you know, some governments are still seemingly a little bit nervous, because at the time that I'm speaking with you now, Thailand's announced that it's going to force airlines to check that all their passengers coming in have had a double vaccination. That's a backflip. And I think, you know, there are a lot of agencies now up in arms and going, what are you doing? We'll see. We'll just see. Because Thailand has had it tough as well, because they do rely on tourism. Yeah. And I think even in China's case, with the change of stance on the borders reopening, there's been a lot of commentary that that's been in response to the protests that have been going on in China at levels that the government's not seen before. So it's a very interesting space to watch. There's still a little bit of dynamics in there, and it makes everything a little bit unpredictable. So this is definitely a space to watch.
It is.
Keeps us all on our toes for sure.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Adelaine. You can't assume that this thing is all over. It is difficult. And of course, we have situations where COVID has started to spread with new variants. So it's really is a movable feast. And from a tourism point of view in particular, one thing that we've learnt over this, I guess the biggest lesson that the tourism industry as a whole learnt, is that travel stopped being an automatic right. So we treated travel for between about 1950 to about 2019 as a right for most people. Now it is less of a right, because we had most of the world closing borders. Within Australia, it was even more confusing, because you couldn't go from Victoria to Queensland or Victoria to New South Wales, because state governments were doing various things. And that was reflected in a lot of other large countries around the world as well. So we've had this very, very confusing situation from a regulatory point of view. A lot of the things that we assumed were always going to be standard. So there was an assumption for a start that we could travel wherever we wanted to. subject to political issues from time to time. We had an assumption that travel was going to get cheaper,
yeah.
which it no longer is. We also had an assumption, I think, that travel was going to be something that was fairly easy to do, that governments would make it easier for us to travel. And that, of course, hasn't proven to be the case. So there were a whole lot of what we call paradigms or worldviews which have gone under great challenge over the last few years because of COVID. COVID has been what we call a transformational crisis because it's not just been a problem for the tourism industry. It's had to make all of us in the tourism business rethink how we organise travel, rethink how we market travel.
Yeah. What do you think will be the biggest challenge for destinations this year?
I think the biggest challenge for destinations will probably be encouraging people to stay longer in a destination. And also, one of the big upwards in destination management is dispersion. That is getting people to see as much of a destination region as possible, giving people reasons to stay in a destination longer. That's always been the challenge.
Yeah.
I spent 18 years of my life in destination management. And I guess the challenges there is to firstly identify what is unique about your destination, make sure that people have the opportunity to know exactly what to do. So obviously making sure that you've got as vivid and interesting set of information about the destination is going to be really critical. I think that one thing is that most tourism businesses are going to have to do is to create a value proposition. So in other words, instead of trying to say, come to us because we're cheap, I noticed, for example, because we talked about Thailand, Thailand talks a great deal about quality tourism, which basically is another expression meaning people who spend lots of money per day. And destinations are concerned about that. One of the problems that occurred with Thailand is that the 12 million Chinese visitors they were getting in 2019 were spending the same amount of money as the 1.4 million Chinese visitors who came to Australia. So we didn't get the numbers, but we sure got the spending power. And I think that's been central to Tourism Australia's strategy of targeting tourists who are prepared to spend extra money.
The looming economic crisis that everyone seems to be talking about, how much will that really dampen travel in 2023?
It probably won't stop people moving. It'll stop the way that they travel. It'll have an impact on the length of stay in a destination. It will also tend, and we saw this actually with the global financial crisis in 2008, 2009. What happened then is that people didn't stop traveling, but they did several things. Firstly, a lot of people traveled to less expensive destinations. They tended, instead of staying in a five-star hotel, they might have stayed in a three-star hotel. They would tend to travel closer to home than perhaps they would have in normal times. So I think we've actually had an illustration of what's likely to happen during the GFC. And a lot of destinations learned. I'll give you a classic example. Abu Dhabi, for example, in 2008 only used to have five-star hotels. They didn't market any other type. All of a sudden, during the GFC, they found that the demand of going to Abu Dhabi really started to tank quite considerably because they were only charging the most expensive products. So the lesson, I guess, for Abu Dhabi and for many other places is try and diversify your tourism product and try and diversify the cost of accommodation and other tourism services in your destination. But generally speaking, so people would still travel, but they would spend less on their travel during financial crisis. But the truth of the matter is a lot of the product is going to have to remain expensive in order to make up for all the money that they lost in 2020 and 2021.
Yeah. Although the diversification might be good news for the mid-range hotels. I mean, if luxury hotels, you know, have no worries, they're going to still do well because there is the demand for those. With a four-star hotel that I was staying at recently, I was surprised to learn that they had cancelled the buffet breakfast. They just did not have the business to sustain that service. You could order your breakfast in room. It was a very limited menu and it was expensive, but that was the way that they were operating to survive.
Well, a lot of hotels also cancelled buffet breakfast for health reasons as well too. So buffet breakfast died a bit of a death during COVID because, you know, you had people coming in and handling the same forks and knives and serving spoons and everything.
Yeah, perhaps. But I was thinking in November, December, would that still be have been the case? Because, you know, masks have generally been...
Not really, but, well, some people were still nervous about going to have a buffet breakfast.
Right.
Because it had been sort of a no-no for a long time. I mean, cruising has always been pretty big about buffet breakfasts and buffet meals. A lot of cruisers actually stopped doing them for a long time.
Yeah.
And some people decided that that was a really good thing. Most people didn't. I love the buffet breakfast, but...
Well, I don't cruise, but are those buffet breakfasts back on those cruises?
They are. Yes, they are now.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Because people like them.
They do. So maybe those four-star hotels, you know, hopefully they'll be bringing those back soon. That was a surprise to me anyway. Mm. But your prediction about prices going up has come true. I'm wondering if you got all your predictions right from last year.
No, of course not. No, I didn't get all my... I mean, one thing that I'd actually put in my book was that I thought it was likely that business travel would actually never fully recover. And I'd have to say that I'm probably a bit wrong in that one. I mean, one of the problems about making any type of prediction is that there's a 50% chance you're going to be right and a 50% chance you're going to be wrong. So I accept that. That's why academics generally do not make predictions if they can possibly avoid it. The media love people like me to make predictions because there's a chance either we'll be showing up as a genius or showing up as an idiot.
As a sham.
That's right.
Well, you did really well last year. Most of your predictions came true. So with the predictions that you've just been sharing, it sounds like it's based on analysis. It's based on keen observation. So I don't think you'd be too far off. But who knows? We'll get a much better picture this time next year. And hopefully no more surprises.
Oh, let's hope not. Well, I think we've had enough of them. We've had more than enough of them. I mean, COVID really has, I think for most people, who have been looking at tourism crisis, this has probably been the biggest crisis that the tourism industry has ever experienced. What I think is heartening in a sense is that people are prepared to come back and try it all again, which I think is great. So there is a lot of cause for optimism about the long-term future of tourism, but it's been a very, very big lesson for us never to take success for granted.
Yeah.
To celebrate it, enjoy it.
Absolutely. David, what about your travel plans this year? I mean, has the cost of travel dampened how you might plan your trips?
Well, yes, to some extent it has. But yes, I've apart from going to a conference in Perth, yes, I'm definitely planning to do some international travel because like a lot of other people, I've gone for 3 years without an overseas trip. And for me, having traveled to so many countries and to travel so frequently, that's been very difficult. So yes, I do intend to travel. My wife is always showing me different things, so she wants to get going too.
What's the top destination on your list?
Oh, I think one of them, even though I've been to it before, is Thailand is very high on the agenda.
It came up a couple of, well, if you've mentioned it that many times during this interview, I had a hunch.
Yeah. Look, there are a lot of countries I'd love to go to, but Thailand's certainly one of my favourites.
Well, having been there just recently, it was a joy just to be back in Asia.
Yeah.
Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed. And as I said, hopefully no nasty surprises this year.
Let's hope.
Yeah. David, thank you so much for your time.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for your wonderful questions.
And we'll be chatting again.
As always.
For sure.
All the best. Hopefully I'll be able to tell you about some travel, so that'll be nice.
That would be fantastic. We'd love to exchange travel stories again, like we haven't been able to for a number of years. So yeah, thank you.
All the very best, Adeline.
And hey, thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the chat, please share the love by leaving a rating and review. And click the follow button if you'd like to be notified when a new episode drops. By the way, if you ever wanted to start a podcast, I have links in the show notes to some of my favorite tools, including Amazon gift cards and discounts. And if you need a hand to find out how to use these tools or launch a podcast, reach out and say hello at uponarrivalpodcast@gmail.com. I'll be back soon to uncover more stories and strategies for a successful future. Till then, cheers.